for the record, this is case number 70363, Taylor B. and Whitaker Mortgage Corporation versus Vargas. We have counsel for appellants as we proceed, please do so. If you wish to reserve any time, please so state.
All right, 2 minutes.
Thank you.
2 minutes. Good morning, my name is Sophie Caradinas. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Taylor B. and Whitaker Mortgage Corporation. We're here appealing the district court's decision dismissing Taylor Bean's complaint as time barred. Now, the issue before the court is simple. When does the statute of limitations accrue for a breach of contract claim?
Now, my understanding is that the payment, the default in the payment took place, and I guess this is in dispute, but the payment that was due August 1st, 2009 was not made.
Correct.
The complaint was filed July 31st, 2015.
Yes.
Correct. So it's five years and 364 days before the sixth.
So the time period we're dealing with is real small. So we have the dates lined up so it's easy for you to follow. We have July 14th, 2009 was the defendant as far as his last payment.
Okay.
Taylor Bean is alleging that breach of the promissory note occurred when she missed her August payment. The complaint was filed July 31st, 2015. So we're The Vargas has alleged that the complaint was filed 17 days too late because they have applied NRS 11200 saying that the statute of limitations should accrue from the date of last payment.
And when was the August payment due?
The August payment, they were not in default until August 15th.
Okay, so not 364, but
a little less.
Yeah,
350.
Less. Yeah.
Give or take.
So the law in Nevada is clear. The Bemis case established a bright line rule that a cause of action for breach accrues when the plaintiff knew or should have known the facts constituting breach. Now, I mean, there's no dispute here that it's a 6-year statute of limitations based on a written contract. The district court created an untenable result by applying NRS 11200 to determine when the 6-year statute of limitations began to accrue. The district court held that the language in NRS 11200 that says the time limitation in NRS 11190 shall commence from the time the last payment was made, applied that to Taylor Bean's breach of contract claim and essentially held that Taylor Bean needed to file its breach of promissory note lawsuit before there was any breach. It's a nonsensical result, and it's a denial of due process because Taylor Bean essentially, NRS 11190 says you have 6 years to file a lawsuit on breach. But then if you apply NRS 11200, I mean, we've discussed the math, but Taylor Bean only got 5 years
the
and 11 months.
The less issues, in your view, with 11200 apply. I know you're saying yes. It doesn't apply.
Yes.
Here,
so,
when how do we make
compensation? There are very specific instances in how 11200 does apply. It has been applied in situations where there has not been a specific act or an act or obligation for the commencement of an action to take place.
Where I thought 11200 was an extender. Like, if I owe you money and I don't pay it, but then I make a payment even though it's long after it's due, that renews the limitation period from the date of that payment. But I never understood it to subtract time.
Yes.
And
so,
go backwards.
So there's, if you look at 11200, there's a semicolon. The statute's long and it's very wordy, but there's a semicolon that I think separates the two sections to apply to different cases.
Yeah.
There's not a huge body of case law that where 11200 has been applied, but I found two distinct types of cases where it has been applied. The first section says the time in NRS 11190 shall be deemed to date from the last transaction or the last item charged or the last credit given. Those cases have been applied where there wasn't There wasn't any specific situation where, you know, we could, or the court could figure out when the statute of limitations could begin to accrue, and I'll point you to some examples. In Borden, in the Borden v. Cow case, it's an older case, but it was between a mortgagor and a mortgagee. The mortgagor initiated a claim for an accounting and a right to redeem a property because he deeded a property to secure a debt. There was no agreement when the payment would be due. And so, you know, when the court was trying to decide, well, when could this individual initiate this claim? And so they reverted to NRS 11200 to the last transaction language and found that the last transaction was the delivery of the deed securing the debt that would initiate the accrual of the statute of limitations. Now, a more recent case is Davidson v. Davidson, and I can get the citation for you in a minute, but that was a 2016 case that cited the Borden lawsuit. But this situation, the court applied it in when to figure out the enforcement of a divorce decree under 11901A. And the ex-wife wanted the husband to pay her a certain amount of equity in their marital home after the delivery of the deed to their property. And the husband didn't do it, and so the wife brought a lawsuit sometime after to enforce the divorce decree. And because there wasn't really, I mean, a set date of when the statute of limitations could accrue, the court again looked to NRS 11200 to find that the statute of limitations began to accrue from the date of the last transaction, which in this case was the date of the delivery of the deed to the husband, which triggered his obligation to pay her the equity in the home that was part of the divorce decree. Another situation where I believe that the first sentence of NRS 11200 applies was in Miller versus York, which had to do with the recovery of interest on a usurious loan transaction. And again, it dealt specifically with the recovery of, you know, this usurious interest, and so there wasn't, again, a specific date that the court could point to for the statute of limitations to accrue. And so, again, they looked to the last item charge, which was the last interest payment for them, the parties to begin to recover interest. Now, then there is the other line of cases that I found, which I believe that you were looking at when you looked at NRS 11200, was when it is the revival of claim by payment. And I think the quintessential case for that is Riff versus Carroll, when essentially a party's claims, the statute of limitations will begin to accrue again if a payment is made after it's already been due, because in the theory behind that is a new payment is a new promise to pay a debt. So that's when the situations where 11200 have applied. But NRS 11200 has never applied to a simple breach of contract case.
Well, there was no breach until August 10th, right?
August
15th. 15th was the date.
Yeah, so I mean, our position is Ms. Vargas made her July payment. She made her July payment on July 14th, 2009.
So how could you have sued on, let's take out the 6 years. Let's say you wanted to sue for breach of contract and you were pressured, you thought she was not going to pay. But if you sued her for breach of contract before August 15 of 2009, you would have been too early because there was no breach, right?
Exactly. And it would have been premature and sanctionable. And how the district court's decision in applying NRS 11200 is basically expecting Taylor Bean to know that Ms. Vargas was going to miss her next month payment. And that's impossible. It's an illogical way to view the statute. And I mean, if the court is going to be interpreting a statute, and the two statutes, they do follow each other, but I mean, they need to be viewed in harmony. And I think the only way to interpret the two so that they work together is that when 11200 applies, only in situations where there is no event or act that forms the basis of the complaint. But we have
one doesn't the second clause after the semicolon, I mean, this is an antiquated statute. It dates back to 1911, maybe even further back than that. But it seems to me to say, if such payment be made after the same shall have become due, that clause to me limits that second phrase to that instance. In other words, it would have only been if, say, the person on the other side of you had made the payment on August 20th. They were late at that point.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. That's how I think that it should be interpreted, and from the case law that I read, that seems to be the correct
way. Did you look at the genesis of this statute, like whether a lot of these things came from California or New York?
No, but I did see the previous statute before it was NRS 11200 and it was General Statute 3645
right.
or something along those lines. And it was very similar. I don't think it had the entire terminology, but it still had when a payment is made on an existing contract after it shall become due.
But you don't know whether other states have similar statutes.
No, I do not.
Only adopted it if they have
no
judicial gloss on them.
I do not. But you know, along those lines, the Riff versus Caldwell case was addressing the second phrase of the statute, and what came into play in that case was the court looked at, because the plaintiff wanted to come into the purview of NRS 11190 because he was claiming that he made taxes on a property, so he was claiming he's making payments that should have revived the statute of limitations. But what the court essentially said was he was so far beyond the statute of limitations that it has to be an existing contract for this to even apply. So he tried to bring his claim 14 years after any sort of transaction ever took place. So that was kind of just an interesting kind of side note on where that case went. But, I mean, long story short, NRS 11200 functions to establish the date of an act when no act or wrong otherwise exists. But here, the act forming the basis of Taylor Bean's complaint is the breach, and the only way that Taylor Bean would have known about the breach was when Ms. Vargas missed that payment, and otherwise it got shorted 30 days, the six-year statute of limitations, which is not how the statute should be interpreted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Del Clevin, appearing for the respondents. Unlike prior counsel, I don't believe the case is that simple. And in fact, the discussion before the court and kind of the beginning shows that when we were trying to figure out the date, and counsel said, well, give or take a few days. If it were that simple, then we would know exactly what the time limit was on this.
Well, when did the breach occur in this case?
Well, and that's the problem. I don't know, and I don't think they know. Because if
you have a promissory note and you're obligated by contract to make payments on it on a monthly basis,
uh-huh.
You don't make a payment. At that point, you're in breach, right?
Well, let's say it's due on the 1st. Can they file suit on the 2nd? Can they file suit after the grace period of the 14th? On the 15th, can they file? Do they have to wait 30 days out for it to be 30 days late to file? Do they have to give a note?
They filed in July of 2009, so we know the next payment was not due at least until August 1st, right? Grace period, irrespective.
Yeah, I would say that at least that time, yeah.
So How could this not be timely filed?
Well, Your Honor, if I could finish, because we're not talking about filing too soon. This isn't a case about filing too soon. This is a case about filing too late. And we were focusing on whether it's too soon. Frankly, it's too late. The statute is very clear. What they're asking us to do, and
what statute is clear?
Well, the one we're talking about, the twofold statute. NRS 11190, periods of limitation. Subsection B says, an action upon a contract, obligation, or liability founded upon an instrument in writing. And in common, it says, except those mentioned in the preceding sections of this chapter. And then, right after that, it says computation of time. This is the very next statute. And the computation of time clearly says, the time of the one above, NRS 11190, shall be deemed to date from the last transaction or the last item charged, or the last credit given. And then there's a semicolon. So that's the first section.
Do you agree that the first section doesn't apply?
No, I don't.
Okay,
the first section applies directly head on.
How does that apply?
It applies because it specifically says that when you calculate the computation of time of the 6 years, the computation of time of 6 years shall be deemed to date from the last transaction or item charged or last credit given. Our client's last credit given was July 14th. When it says the computation of time shall be deemed to start from that, it starts from that date. It's very clear on that. It doesn't say, if the legislature wanted it to say,
Counsel, we have the statutes and we can argue until we're blue in the face about that. I'm interested in how you wish to distinguish the Bemis versus estate of Bemis case, which is, give or take, a little less than 10 years old. What are we to do with that case and the interpretation of the statute?
The Bemis case,
i.e. the discovery,
cites the Bemis case. There's a it's talking about the discovery rule. And in this one, it says that the discovery rule applies only when the statute is silent. And they cite the Oak Grove in this case. In fact, in footnote 1, it says, in dealing with statutes that do not specifically, that do not specify when a cause of action accrues, we have held that the discovery rule would apply. This is one where we have a statute that does specifically say,
let me read this. Under the discovery rule, the statutory period of limitation is told until the injured party discovers or reasonably should have discovered facts supporting the cause of action, which was the point Justice Pickering was trying to get to. In this particular point, as we go back and forth, we know the date that the last payment was made. We're going back and forth, plus or minus, when the next payment is due, and trying to establish when the actual breach occurred.
And that's the problem. We don't know that.
If we don't know that, then why was this case dismissed on that issue?
Because it was dismissed from the last date the credit was given. And that's the problem.
And is that appropriate in light of the language from Bemis, from your
statement? Yes, it's absolutely appropriate, because Bemis specifically cites Oak Grove, which says,
the credit was given applies that way. The credit was given is when somebody delivers goods to you in a commercial setting.
It doesn't say that, Your Honor. It doesn't say that.
Statutes don't change meaning because of the progress of time. The credit was given is not on a promissory note where you're asserting breach. The breach and any knowledge of the breach didn't occur until no payment was made when due by the terms of the promissory note. So what does the promissory note say?
Your Honor, the promissory note says, which I've been trying to get to, it says several things. Number one, it says we have at the time when the payment's supposed to be made, then there's a grace period, then there's a requirement of a notice of default. So do we go from the notice of default, which may have been done 3-6 months down the line? Do we go from the 15th? Do we go from the 1st? And in cases where you have periodic payments that are like this, the legislature said this could be a nightmare, especially for the lower courts, and we're going to be having trials on when you should have known. And so we're just going to say 6 years from the last credit given. We're not talking, the issue is not here before the court, whether it was done early, it's, we're talking about at the very end. And to, in order to provide some clarity for everybody, the biggest complaint that my clients have is, are we going to win this case? And on this one, I would say, well, I don't know. It depends. It depends on whether the court's going to say, well, when should they have known? Should they have known on the 15th, on the 1st, on the 2nd, 30 days later?
Until they failed to make a timely payment, right?
I don't know that that's irrelevant before the court.
Would you agree if it's relevant or not, but would you agree with me that there was no breach of the promissory note until they failed to make the payment when due?
I believe so, yes.
So the breach occurred on August 15th?
I don't know. I believe that there wasn't a breach on the July 14th, 15th date. That's correct. I believe a breach occurred after that. But again, that's not what we're talking about. The statute doesn't
it's
say...
It's an action upon a contract, right?
It is.
And when did the breach of contract occur?
Well, I don't know how that's relevant. And I don't know, and I've answered it several times. I don't know. I don't know if it's at the notice of breach, because mortgage companies give a notice of breach 30, 60, 90, 2 years later. It could be on the 2nd, if it was due on the 1st. It could be the 15th. I don't know when the breach is, and this is why, in my opinion, the legislature 100-something years ago said, listen, on these complex cases, when you have these monthly payments like this, to provide stability so that we all know what we're talking about, it's very clear. It's from the last date the credit was given. It doesn't say 30 days. It doesn't say from the date of the breach. The statute is very clear. If the legislature wanted it to say from the date of the breach, it would say from the date of the breach.
Mr. Clevin, so your position is NRS 11.200 modifies the six-year language in 11190 by saying it's not just simply 6 years, it's running from the date of the last payment. Is that basically your argument?
That's exactly it. And there are several examples where this is the case. For example, somebody wants to file an appeal and you have 30 days, well, you get to 3 days for mailing. What if it took you 5 days to get the mailing? Do we adjust and say, well, I'm sorry, you get 30 days plus the extra two? No, we say, I'm sorry, the statute says you get 3 days, you got 3 days.
And also, the statutes do allow for some give and some take. And going back to Bemis, just for point of reference, the previous portion, the rest of the quote, the rationale behind the discovery rule is that the policies served by the statutes of limitation do not outweigh the equities reflected in the proposition that plaintiffs should not be foreclosed from judicial remedies before they know that they have been injured or can discover the cause of their injuries, quoting from Peetson versus Braun, which is a 1990 case.
Yes.
So the court has looked at what you're saying is allowing this soft attitude in terms of trying to define this. Why isn't that appropriate? Should we overrule these two cases? In essence, that's what you're asking.
No, I'm not. I don't think I am at all. Not in a million years am I asking that. In fact, what everyone is focusing on is how early they could have filed. That's not the issue before this court. They didn't file on the 2nd, and we're saying it was too early. They filed too late. That's the issue before this court. And frankly, Bemis, and I've tried three times, if you read what they cite in the
whole... I appreciate the position that they filed too late, but I'm having a problem with the math. I have this great big chalk stick and a green chalkboard. I'm old school.
Well, let me give you an example.
This don't make sense to me.
Well, I understand, but the legislature has decided that 6 years applies for certain cases and not for others. Some cases are 4 years. Some cases, if you sue an attorney, is 3 years. Well, maybe it's 4 years. Well, maybe it's 2 years. Maybe it's 2 years from the day.
You have admitted that you don't know when the appropriate time is to file or when the breach occurred. If you don't know when that breach occurred, then how can you say they filed too late or too early?
Because the statute specifically says...
No, not what the statute. You said you don't know. Your client does not know. Didn't you say that, sir?
Yes.
Okay. Then how can you stand here and tell us that
I will
file incorrectly if you're taking that position and not giving this within the context of the 6 years?
Because it specifically says in NRS 11200 that it doesn't matter when the breach is. It goes from the date of the last credit given. If the statute said, as they want, that it's 30 days before after the last credit given, or 30
30 days or 6 years from the breach, then the legislature would have put that. They're asking this court to read into that statute and to add
language. So on the day that they made the last payment, they would be delinquent?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Would they be delinquent on the last day they made a payment?
Would
they be delinquent on the last day they made a payment?
No, they would not be delinquent on that day.
That's what you're advocating.
No, I'm not. I'm advocating us following the statute that the legislature drafted that says in complicated cases like this, when you don't have a pure time in which to point to the breach, then you just go 6 years from the last date of the payment. That's what I'm saying. It's very clear. This, in fact, last Oak Grove v. Bell is cited in Bemis, and it says in Oak Grove, this is the holding that where the catch-all statute of limitations, which we're talking about here, was silent as to the time of accrual, the discovery rule would apply. The discovery rule only applies when the statute is silent as to accrual date, the accrual time. Ours is not the case. Ours, the statute is specific on the accrual time, and our statute says the time accrues from the last transaction or item charged or last credit given. It's very clear. They're asking this court to rewrite a statute that's over 100 years old by adding language that says 30 days from, or in contracts where it doesn't have a time period, et cetera. We have one that squarely falls within the statute. The statute is clear on its face. There's no reason to rewrite the statute. This court, I mean, and they spend a lot of time talking about absurdities. There are absurdities sometimes. I mean, the SFR decision, a lot of people went, well, that was absurd. But the court followed the plain meaning of the statute and said, look, this is what it says. If the legislature wanted to change it, they've had 120 years to change this. They could have changed it, but they've left it the way it is, and the statute, I believe, is directly on point. The Bemis case doesn't go against this. In fact, I think it goes in our favor. The last thing I wanted to point out was the statute, for example, under the UCC. The UCC applies statute of limitations as well on contracts. They're not 6 years because they're a carve-out from this. There's exceptions to this rule. And under the UCC, a contract is 4 years to file. And it says specifically right after that, whether or not it's known that there's a breach. And it says specifically in that statute, from the date of the breach, whether or not the breach is known. So the legislature, in their infinite wisdom, says sometimes it's from the date of the breach, sometimes it's from the date of the breach whether you know about it or not. Sometimes they leave it silent, in which case then we look and say, well, when did you know about it? But in this case, this is one where specifically the statute dead on says from the last date the credit is given. And if the only way to get by that is to read language into it that does not exist.
Closing thought?
So you're not making an argument under the second clause of 11200. You're just relying on last credit given?
Well, it's interesting that the second clause says, and then you guys spend some time on it, it says the promissory note or other evidence indebtedness of such payment be made after the same shall have become due, the limitation shall commence from the time the last payment was made. But so here's the problem. When was it due? Was it due on the first? Because if it was due on the first, then she did make a payment after the payment was due. If it was due July 1st, then she made a payment after that payment was due. Directly on point with this statute, it says if it's paid after it's due, then the limitation shall commence from the date the last payment was made. So again, under both of those provisions of the statute, I think it's directly on point. Since she paid it on the 14th and it was due on the 1st, it goes from the last payment, the last date the payment was made. This statute is, I don't know how we get around it.
And with that, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have a minute 55 for your rebuttal.
There's no basis to overrule Bemis. It's good law. Riff versus Cowell explained NRS 11200 as applying to particular types of actions. It does not apply to every action because the law for breach of contract is that it applies once a party knows that.
So is it your position at 11200 200 can't shorten the six-year time period, it can only extend it?
It cannot.
How do we shorten that?
The six-year statute of limitation. It enforces the six-year statute of limitation.
What does it do? Is it just, can it, like Justice Pickering says, maybe it's an extender statute and not a shortened statute?
11200 does not apply to breach of contract claims. It only applies to claims to establish the date of an act or event that forms the basis of the complaint when one is not otherwise available. But in this instance, the breach, the non-payment, is what forms the basis of this complaint. So we don't need to resort to NRS 11200. It's there to help the court decide when the statute of limitations accrue when there is no date otherwise. If, say, the parties did not come up with an agreement of when a payment was due. In this case, this is not a complex case. This is not convoluted. It's not hard to determine. We have a promissory note with a due date. That's when the payment's not due, we're not made, that's when the breach occurs. Regardless, the longstanding law is that the discovery rule applies to breach of contract claims. That's the law under Bemis. And the...
Finish your thought.
When a party knew or should have discovered that breach is a question of fact. And so whether Vargas believes that it would be too hard to determine when the breach occurred, even though we have a due date for the payment, that's a question for the trier of fact to determine. It's not a basis to dismiss Taylor Bean's complaint as untimely. So the case should be reversed.